The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
And welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. We're here in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah.
At the East Meadow Public Library for our 103rd live show. Yeah. And I'm here with our special guest we're going to be talking to, with, and about, which is awesome because it makes my life easier, Miss Kristen Gutsnick.
Hey, thank you, everyone.
As I mentioned, I'm going to be talking to us about Kristen in just a few minutes, but before we do any of that, we have to take it away with the news.
It's Morphin' time!
The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks of sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. As well as the fine folks of the Big Apple Con, which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of comic bookness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way for November the 21st. Tickets are not on sale right now. Also want to give out shout-outs for our Patreons, of which they are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Burrell, Newsday famous Reza Media, Shad Rabbit Art, Yasmin Ray, The Hurricane, and Millie Portes. If you want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromtheradio.com. The little button on there that takes you right to our Patreon page. Also on the It Came From The Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 is on sale right now, and issue 2 has been submitted to the printer as of today, and will be for sale for the MCon, which will be on April 25th at the East Meadow Public Library. So it's finally happening. All right, as always, we start off with the sad news. Actor James Stewart Tolkien died recently. As of this recording, no cause of death has been announced. While James appeared in a handful of movies and TV shows, he was perhaps best known for his roles of FBI agent George Wigan in the movie War Games, Commander Tom Stinger Jarvis in the film Top Gun, Detective Hugh Lubrick in the first live-action He-Man movie, and of course, Vice Principal Mr. Strickland in Back to the Future Part 1 and 2, and he also played W. Marshall James Strickland in Part 3. He was 94. You familiar? What's so funny?
No. I'm sorry, nothing. Just starting
You're laughing that he died? That's terrible.
Sorry, it's really sad.
That's terrible.
He lived like a really good life.
He had a good life?
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know.
Were you a fan of his work?
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to the next and last bit of sad news. Actress Valerie Ritchie Perrine also died recently. Valerie is perhaps best known for her role as Honey Bruce opposite of Dustin Hoffman in a Lenny Bruce biopic, Lenny, from 1974. And, of course, as Eve Tessmacher in the original Superman film from 1978. She was 82. Are you familiar with... Why are you laughing?
I'm not. Now I'm just thinking, don't laugh.
Do you remember?
Yeah, no. I'm very big fan. I know the movie Lenny.
You've seen the movie Lenny? I've never watched the movie Lenny.
No, I've just heard of it.
But you know Superman, right?
Yeah.
Miss Tessmacher, you know. Miss...
There it is.
There's the recognition I was waiting on.
That's...
She, you know, she gave Superman a kiss and took the thing off of in the water.
Yeah,
that was her. That's it for the sad news. We're gonna move quickly away from that.
It's just starting off with that. Well,
see, the logic is that if we start off with the sad news, there's nowhere to go but up.
Yeah.
So that's
definitely that. No, that makes a lot of sense.
All right. So now moving on to the not as sad news from the
That's a lot of nuts
department. The new Super Mario movie has taken the number one spot in the domestic box office, pulling in $131.7 million in ticket sales in its first week of release, beating out the new sci-fi film Project Hail Mary, which came at the number two spot, making an additional $31.7 million in its second week of release. For those of you keeping track, The aforementioned Project Hail Mary is still the highest grossing film of this year so far, with $218.2 million, followed by the aforementioned Super Mario Bros. Movie with $190.8 million. Now, you have a child. Did you go and take your child to go see Super Mario?
No, we actually left him with my parents and saw Project Hail Mary last week.
Really?
Yeah.
So how was Project Hail Mary?
I loved it. I thought it was great.
So if you were to review it, what made it so great?
I thought it was really fun and funny. If I had a quibble, I'd say I don't like that. It was like a little slightly too long, but I thought it was like a good play on like the sci-fi astronaut kind of movie, where instead of just being like a bleak meditation on like loneliness, it was actually like cute and fun and funny. Huh. And I just really like those directors, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who did like the Spider-Verse movies and stuff like that. It's a 21 Jump Street movie, so I just will see anything they do.
Oh, okay. So you were contributing to the to the money.
Yeah, it's true. And I wanted to see Mario as well with our child, and my husband's like, we can't do that to all the Mario fans and disrupt them with our crying baby. And I was like, they won't care. But
I think they would care.
I was like, what if we go at like 11 a.m. on like a 9 a.m.?
As I've mentioned many times on the show, I used to work at a movie theater. And just having any kids' movies is always a bad idea because the kids are always running up and down and screaming and always carrying on.
Yeah.
There was a couple of times where we had customers complain that the parents just let their kids run up and down the aisles, and we have to go handle the law. I'm like, come on, just have the kids sit down.
But, yeah, well, we've never taken them to a movie theater in a movie before, so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how it would work.
I can say that, so when I was a kid, I watched Transformers, the original Transformers, the animated movie, 1986. And it was, as you would expect, a lot of kids running and screaming around. Now, are you familiar with the Transformers, the movie?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. So you know what happens to Prime when he gets there, right?
Oh, actually, no.
So when I say, are you familiar with the movie?
Familiar, like, in the...
The biggest thing about the movie is that they killed off the main character. Spoilers for a 20, 30-year, 40-year-old movie.
It's okay. Yeah, you can spoil Transformers.
So during the movie, we're hearing kids screaming and exciting about the action that's happening on the screen. But when the character dies, dead silence. And it blew my mind as a kid watching a movie, hearing, and then, shoom, nothing.
Respect for optimism.
Yeah, it stayed with me like, oh my God, why is it quiet in this theater? And then it picked up afterwards. But it was just something that never happened to me before, that a theater was just dead silent.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those things that
happens. Like a just core memory.
Yes. So moving on. From the We Really Like Money department, none other than Netflix has announced that they will be making K-pop Demon Hunters available on Blu-ray as part of their Criterion collection. Of note, it is highly unusual that Netflix releases any of its movies on DVD, and it's the first and foremost, as it is a first and foremost streaming service. No word on a release date. Did you see K-pop Demon Hunters?
No, I really want to.
So I'm on the other end of that. I have no interest in watching it because the hype is too big. So if I go and watch it, it's never going to live up to this hype of what it's supposed to be. So I don't want to be disappointed, so I'm just not going to watch
it. I keep hearing the song, and it's really catchy.
Oh, is that
Golden or
that
something?
Why?
Yeah, and I was like, I want to watch that.
Do you think it's odd that a streaming service would put out a DVD, even though Netflix originally was a DVD company?
Yeah, I still have like one Netflix DVD from back in the day. But
really? You never returned?
I declared it as lost and kept it because hadn't returned it in so long and hadn't watched it, but I kind of wanted to get my money back, because back in the day, you would have to, like, pay the fee whether or not you, like, took movies out, and I was like, I've paid, like, $10 for this at this point. It was now Voyager, which I ended up watching. It was good.
Wait, so you were allowed to just say I lost it?
Yeah, you just say it got lost in the mail, and then they forgive you.
Really?
This is, like, no longer much of a life hack, because this is, like, a... from like 20 years ago or something.
That's crazy. I never knew
that
was a thing.
I actually stole like multiple movies from Netflix.
Well, we're glad
that
they're
fine. They've got money.
The statute of limitations
is
over.
But I think that they put out Roma on Criterion as well. So
yeah, it's
kind of funny for Roma and K-pop Demon Hunter.
Out of all the stuff that they have.
Well, that's very merchandisable, so it makes sense.
I guess. So moving on, there's a serious topic now. From the Stand By Your Man department, none other than Melissa Gilbert had this to say about her husband, actor Timothy Busfield, after he was indicted on 4 counts of criminal sexual conduct with a child under the age of 13 in New Mexico. Melissa says, even if he's exonerated, he will always be that guy. the last person in the world who would hurt a child. Our life as we know it is done. We are grieving for what we had. All of our plans, all of our dreams, all of our ideas, all of our projects for Tim is done. He's canceled. For those of you who don't know, or care for that matter, Tim was accused by the parents of the twin boys on the set of the TV series The Cleaning Lady. According to the criminal complaint and later court proceedings, one child reported nightmares and fear, and prosecutors said the boys later disclosed acts of sexual abuse to a therapist in September 2025. Tim's attorney says that the allegations were driven by revenge after the boys were written off the show, and they point out that both boys initially denied inappropriate touching in a police interview. Of note, the original complaint also said that Warner Brothers conducted its own investigation and was unable to corroborate the allegations. So I watched the Cleaning Lady. You ever see The Cleaning Lady?
No.
So it's standard practice for a lot of TV shows. When they have a kid, they usually make twins so that way they get around the child labor laws. Mm-hmm. They can have the kid on set more than often. And I watched the show, and I'm like, this is a terrible kid actor, and I just really cared for him. And then the show lasted 3 seasons, I believe, and then they swapped out the kid for another kid, which is also common, yeah, that when they get older, they just replace the kid. He was on it for a long time, and then they fired the two twins, and then they brought in a new kid. So there is some credence to the parents getting upset and trying to get revenge on making up the story. And on the other hand, it's very possible that this really did happen. It's so weird because the thing about kids is that sometimes they're really honest and no one believes them, and sometimes they lie through their teeth.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to try to figure out what the situation is, and it's kind of rough for the other person who might be innocent and is now going to be blacklisted and labeled as a child molester, or on the other hand, is a child molester and might get off.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Oh, that's a loaded question. Oof. I don't know. I mean, I've never heard of any of these people or this show.
Timothy Busfeld was Poindexter from Revenge of the Nerds. He was also on ER, I believe. Mm-hmm. Beard guy, tall. You know Melissa Gilbert, Little House on the Prairie. She's famous for that.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. Okay. No, so you know what?
Her husband.
That's all. Entire pop culture stuff that missed me completely.
Well, I mean, you have a child.
Yeah.
So what would you think if that happened, if your child
had elders? I would be, like, horrified if he got...
But I know, if not asking if, what would you think if they got elders, I'm thinking, what would you think if your child said that?
I don't think I would, if he were ever in anything, which actually would be a possibility, because one time we submitted him for, like, a Huggies commercial, because we're like, the world has to see how cute my baby is. I would just be there the whole time, just like watching him like a hawk, and
right.
I would not let him be in like the showbiz industry.
Fair enough.
Because of creeps like that guy.
Because of potential alleged creeps.
Yes, alleged.
Like that guy.
I don't know. I've heard that Revenge of the Nerds is like a creepy movie too. So that's like a strike against him. Right? Don't they like? I haven't seen it.
The
nerds get too much revenge or something.
The movie has not aged well.
Okay.
That's the official line.
Yeah.
It has not aged well. So moving on. From the crime time after prime time department, none other than CBS has announced their programming for After the Late Show ends its 33-year run. Turns out on Friday, May 22nd, Byron Allen's Comics Unleashed will begin airing back-to-back half-hour episodes followed by the game show Funny You Should Ask, also produced by Byron Allen. Apparently, Funny You Should Ask has been on the air since 2017, and I've never heard of this show at all, and Comics Unleashed has been on the air since 2006, which I have heard of. Byron says, 50 years, I've been waiting for this moment. Definitely, I'm going for it. I'm investing millions and millions of dollars to prove myself. I created and launched Comics Unleashed 20 years ago so my fellow comedians could have a platform to do what we all love and make people laugh. I truly appreciate CBS's confidence in picking me of our two-hour comedy block of Comics Unleashed and Funny Should Ask because the world can never have enough laughter. Now, this is a different situation for CBS because Byron is actually paying for the time slot. So it's not like that CBS is producing the show and bring it on. He's paying for that time slot.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's kind of interesting that he's putting his money on to get the ratings, and then obviously he gets his money back from the advertisers. That's how usually this type of thing works. Byron Allen, do you know who Byron Allen is? Have you familiar with Byron Allen? So Byron Allen, I always tell my friends that I feel like I'm a Byron Allen because I've been in the industry for a long time, and I know a lot of people, and I have a lot of connections, but I'm just like on the low tier of things. So Byron Allen is this guy who knows like everybody. He's had interviews with so many people throughout the years. He's had many shows. And he has this Comics Unleashed show, which is just this little stupid comedy half-hour show where basically he has a set of comedians. He sits there and he throws them set-up lines, and then they make their jokes. That's the entire premise of the show. And it's just so weird that he's just kind of just been there. And if you see him, it's like, oh, yeah, that guy. And everybody knows that guy, but he's never been like a really, like his name isn't like a really well-known name, like David Letterman, Johnny Carson, Jay Leno, Jimmy Fallon, any of those things. It's just weird. So it's interesting that he's taken this opportunity because now there's no more late show on CBS to try and make his stamp after all this time. Which also is interesting, before the late show happened, there used to be, CBS had shows called Crime Time After Prime Time, which they had these dramas and action and low-budget shows that was on CBS that you used to watch. And I was a fan of those, so when they actually brought in the late-night talk show, I was kind of upset. Do you remember Crime Time After Prime? No, not at all. There was Sweating Bullets. It was a show called Forever Night. It was a vampire with Jerry and Wynn Davies, and he had, like, blonde hair, and he was working with...
Sounds good.
It was good. It was weird, because this was before Buffy, and so it was like he played a moral vampire, but then as the show went on, he was eating good and got a little chunky. Oh. So it was like, how can he be an immortal vampire and then get chunky later on? So
it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it was funny. There was also Scene of the Crime, which was like an anthology series that had crimes. They would explain things on that. It was a show called Fly By Night and Dark Justice. I think it was like a judge who went out and committed who did vigilante justice. It was a big thing. It was after regular prime time. You had the news. And then you watch these prime time shows or little shows that were like little low budget, but not like super low budget. They were kind of like syndicated stuff, like I was on Channel 11 or something like that. It was a very interesting thing. And then the talk shows came in, and now they're gone. So what are your thoughts on the talk show leaving and Byron Allen taking over?
It's kind of sad that like this kind of institution that's been for so long, like the late night talk shows are like all going away, but at the same time, I mean, that is weird to me and sad, but I mean, I also don't watch any of those. Like, I'll
so
watch,
it's
like...
your fault.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would...
Well, you're supposed to watch it because that...
Also, I don't have cable, or I don't have TV, I just have streaming. God, it is my fault. but, like, I like Conan, and he's not really on anymore. I, like, would watch clips, and, you know, honestly, I watch old clips on YouTube of, like, people being interviewed on... various late night shows, but
so if you were a Conan fan, you remember that whole debacle with NBC and him
Right.
So that was why all that stuff at CBS happened, because David Letterman was supposed to get the Tonight Show. He didn't get the Tonight Show. He left. He went to CBS. That's why he became the competition with Jay Leno.
Mm-hmm.
And then Leno, as you know, said he was going to give it up.
And he didn't give it up. Well, he did for like a second,
and they
got cold feet.
And then Conan was being eyed to go to CBS because he was friends with David Letterman, so that was a whole big kerfuffle.
Yeah. It was actually just watched a 30 Rock episode that was like a metaphor for that. Wow, it was timely at the time. But it's cool that it's a comedy, because that's really the point of late night talk shows, is jokes. So if it gives... comedians more of a spotlight.
So have you
ever
heard?
Better than Primetime.
Have you ever heard of Comics and Leaves? Never saw it?
Heard of it. I haven't seen it.
All right. Well, at least you know it exists.
Yeah.
That's something. All right.
Lack of cable and it's really, you know, if you ask me about 90s stuff, it's got to be like cartoons and stuff.
All right.
I would watch Frasier as a kid, and I tell this to my husband. I was like, I thought Frasier was really confusing and the jokes didn't make any sense. And he's like, you have to watch it as, like, not a small child. Because I would see it, like, when I was, like, homesick from school. And I was like, this is the worst show ever. But apparently it's good.
Apparently. So here's a fun fact. Kelsey Grammer is, I believe, in the Guinness Book of World Records as the actor having the longest time as one character on TV.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So moving on. From the behind closed doors department, none other than SAG... and the AMPTP, which is the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, just released a joint statement about the upcoming new contract talks before the June 30th deadline. It reads, simply, SAG-AFTRA and the AMPTP will resume formal negotiations as of Monday, April 27th, and remain under a mutually agreed-upon media blackout. This is very different from the last time, which was in 2003, for those of you not, who may not be paying attention, as now Sean Astin... Sean Astin is now the head of SAG, and Fran Drescher, who is the nanny, you know the nanny,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
She used to be in charge of SAG.
Yeah.
And she was the one that was handling the last negotiation deal, which turned into the longest strike ever for actors fighting over AI.
Yeah.
Here we are now, 3 years later, nothing has changed, and now they're having secret negotiations, which I find is weird, as opposed to the last time, which was very public, and it led to the strike. Do you think that because it's the secret hush-hush type deal, that we may not lead to a strike or not?
I hope it doesn't lead to a strike, because it's not good for the biz, but I hope that the actors, I guess, get what they want.
But do you remember the last strike? And
yeah,
how, right.
I do. I remember. It lasted a really long time. It kind of cratered the film industry
right
after, like, COVID. So
yeah.
It was like, but at the same time, it's like, if they have AI in movies, or if they don't, like, stop that, then it's going to ruin, like, the arts. So I'm conflicted about that.
But
hopefully Sean Astin will be able to carry the SAG to Mordor.
Do you think he has the ability, to bring it together? Like, I was always shocked that the nanny was the one in charge. And I know she's not the nanny, but that's all you see her as. Like, the nanny's in charge. It didn't.
With that voice, you have to listen to her.
Yes, that's true. But she made it. She went to the media. She made it a big spectacle to show what she's trying to fight for. To her credit, I thought that was kind of a bold move to do, as opposed to her just being dismissed. You know, it's just an Annie trying to fight for AI. But no, they made it a big thing, and then that led to the strike. But the fact that they're kind of hush-hush about this really sets off alarms in the back of my head. Like, what kind of deals are they actually doing?
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll all work out. And, I mean, he's Rudy, so he's overcome great odds.
I'm sorry. All right, so moving on for the last, let's see, yes, this should be the last one, last bit of news. From the Get the AI Out of Here department, none other than OpenAI Sora has announced that they are discontinuing the program. This comes after, as we mentioned in our previous episode of our show, Disney announced a $1 billion deal with the company that allowed Disney Plus users to create videos using some of their intellectual property. Turns out that, according to reports, OpenAI was burning through cash at about $1 billion a month.
Whoa.
Executive says, "We're saying goodbye to the Sora app, to everyone who created with Sora, shared it, and built a community around it. Thank you. What you have made with Sora mattered. And now we know this news is disappointing." Disney says, "As the AI field advances rapidly, we respect OpenAI's decision to exit the video generation business to shift its priorities elsewhere. We appreciate the constructive collaboration between our teams and what we learn from it. And we will continue to engage with AI platforms to find new ways to meet fans where they are while responsibly embracing new technologies that respect IP for the rights of creators." What do you think of that?
I think Disney is so evil. Like, they pretend they're not, but they're just so horrible. I even have my own, like, a off-the-record Disney story.
We're on the record now.
I know. I'm just teasing it.
Oh, okay.
Just read between the lines. No, that's just pretty terrible.
It's terrible that the app got ended, and now Disney, who was going to spend $1 billion on this thing, just went poof. Or is it bad that they're going to look for other avenues?
They're just going to, like, make, like, crappy AI versions of, like, Mulan or something.
Probably.
And they already, like, don't pay their artists, and this is going to be them paying their artists even less and, like, devaluing. Well, you know what? Actually, the problem with Disney lately has been, like, that they, like, devalued the things that they spent billions of dollars acquiring, which is why, like, a lot of their stuff doesn't do well. So this is just them doing that even more. Like, if they just do, like, AI Star Wars, it's going to make no one want to go see, like, you know, Mandalorian and Grogu or whatever, which is already a hard sell because you'd have to watch the Book of Boba Fett, and I refuse. So I just feel like it's, like, a bad decision, but I don't know. Can't tell the future, so maybe it is a good financial decision.
The fact that they made a big stink about it, gonna spend $1 billion on this service, and then the service is like, nah, we're done. maybe it kind of tells people that AI isn't as...
It's going to be a bubble?
Yes, it might be the bubble. Because you would think that if you had Disney behind your company, but you're burning $1 billion a month, what are they doing? Especially if it's all user stuff. So the idea was that Disney was going to be like, hey, you guys make something that you guys like, put it on Disney Plus so you can watch it and still pay us the money for using Disney Plus. So now they're like, we learned what we could from these guys. They're out. Let's go find something else and make you do all the work and let us cast the money. I think it's really weird.
Yeah, but also if it costs like $1 billion a month, then they may as well just make movies at that point, right?
But it's just so weird how the AI is kind of starting. I think this is the chinks in the armor, the cracks of where it started off hot, and then people are like, what can I do with it? And they're like, all right, they're bored after like 5 minutes, and then that's it, and it's over. I think maybe that might be the case, and AI is going to be akin to CGI, where if you remember when CGI first came out, everybody was hating on CGI. Oh, it was taking jobs.
I still do. No, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, taking away jobs from the animators, what have you. It did. But I'm saying that was what they had saying about AI now. But then it's kind of going...
Yeah, well, point out like how many like 2D animation films have been in theaters since like The Princess and the Frog. It's been very, very few.
Yeah, like three, maybe.
I don't know, yeah. There's like very, very few. So it did actually, like, a lot of people have really lost the art of making 2D animation. Some people still do.
But it's also incorporated into films nowadays. So that's why I think what's going to happen with AI. It's not going to take over.
That'd be even worse, though.
But it is going to be incorporated. And the reason is because the consumer doesn't care. I've been saying this for a long time. If the consumer doesn't care, then it doesn't care, as in...
subconsciously breaks your immersion in something when you can tell something is CGI.
Yes.
Or if you're doubting whether something is real. Because if you watch, like, a 70s movie, like, I watched this movie called, like, Sorcerer, and there was this big, like, truck going across this bridge and water and stuff, and it was so terrifying. Mm-hmm. Because you're like, they really put this truck across a bridge, and like, it looks like everyone's about to really die. And it was so much scarier and more visceral because it was a real thing happening on film. Or even if you use like tricks, like, you know, forced perspective or whatever. But like, if it's CGI, like, it just pings something in like your subconscious and tells you it's not real and it lowers the stakes. So I think it's much worse, and I think it doesn't impact people's enjoyment, and I think people are like burnt out on CGI.
But the point I'm making, and to be fair, I am really against AI, 100%.
It's like even worse than CGI.
But the consumer, in the fact that that's where the money is coming. If you can go to a store and you can get the professional whatever for $20, and you get the knockoff crappy version for $2,
yeah,
a lot of people will buy the $2 version. So in the same instance, if it's AI made and it's cheaper and easy to access, the average consumer will just get that and they'll be making the money. So like, oh, well, it doesn't matter if we put all this money, energy, and effort into the better thing, with a smaller, crappier thing is making money. That's my logic behind it. And it's sad that the consumer, if they're not educated, will go for the lower hanging fruit.
I think there's some logic there, but the difference between like a good versus like a piece of content is that we're already inundated with so much content that most people are looking for something good and not just something that's there and is cheap. Because you can watch like Citizen Kane for free. Like, not that the average person's gonna do that, but like, you can watch like good stuff for free.
Yes, yes.
So why would you watch AI slop? Other than for the initial novelty, which I get, but then that novelty goes away once you've seen a bunch of AI stuff. It's very boring, and like, it always has some sort of like, it's just like soulless.
Well, that was my point, that where the bubble is,
yeah,
that
exactly.
It's gonna,
yeah, totally,
it's gonna pop, because people are like, eh, I don't care anymore. I mean, a lot.
But they shouldn't use it as like in movies, because then it's just bad.
There is an application to use it, provided that they do compensate the people doing it. There was a movie, Fall. Have you heard of the movie Fall? About people climbing up and they're going to fall? very simple premise. It was recent.
Yeah, okay.
It was made as a rated R movie. And they went to sell the movie, and they decided to turn it into a PG-13 movie. So all the curse words, they use AI to change the curse words to not curse words. In that instance, as opposed to bring everybody back to set, bring ADR all this stuff. It. Well, their lips would still, if they're saying one thing, it's not like the bad kung fu movies where they're saying one thing and they're like, no, it actually merged it in to make them appear that they were actually talking. So if the actors were compensated fairly for that use of that, and it was for AI, and everybody was happy, and everybody got paid for it, I think it would be fine. But I think one of the biggest problems with AI is that they're not compensating people for it. And I think that's one of the crucial missteps of AI in itself, is because they're saying, oh, we can do it cheaper, we can do it free, and not pay these other people. But if they were paying people, I think it would be a little more well-receptive.
Yeah. I don't know. I still think it's just really bad publicity for your thing to do that. Because they did that with The Brutalist, where, like, they used AI to make Adrian Brody's, like, Hungarian better. And it's weird, because it's like, if I didn't know that, I would have been like, oh, he spoke Hungarian really well in this one scene. But, like, knowing that took me out of the movie.
Right.
Kind of like when you're, like, watching The Flash, and you're like, ooh, Ezra Miller. It just, like, takes you out to have, like, a real-life thing just pop in your head when you're watching something.
All right, so fair enough. But that is it for the news. So we're going to take a quick break in front of a live studio audience. We'll be right back with more. It Came From the Radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com.
Hey everybody, this is Todd McFarlane of the record-setting Spawn comic series. And if you're looking for any kind of cool conversation about creators, about entertainment, about all that good stuff, you go to It Came From the Radio. You're listening to the right spot.
CradleCon returns to the Cradle of Aviation Museum May 16th and 17th. This year features a G.I. Joe reunion with Larry Hama, plus the Crow creator James O'Barr, comics, cosplay, retro gaming, and more, all supporting the museum's education programs. Tickets are at cradleofaviation.org.
Hey, this is Billy West from Show Business. You're listening to It Came From the Radio. Get out. Get out.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah!
At the East Middle Public Library for our 103rd live show. I am here with our special guest. We're going to be talking to a friend about Miss Kristen Guzman.
Thanks.
It's funny, Kristen, I've known you for a very long time. We were talking before we started that we actually did a live stream back 8 years ago at Royal Collectibles, if I remember correctly. It's so crazy how I've known you for so long and you haven't changed a bit. You look exactly the same. I look like super old now.
You look the same too.
I don't know about that.
We both found of you.
And you were doing Hench Girl. That was what you were promoting back then. So I guess the short question is, what has happened between then and now?
Oh my gosh, so much stuff. Yeah, it's funny. I forgot, and then you reminded me, and then it all like rushed back to me. At Royal Collectibles, we did a little like quick show there. It was really fun. Let's see. Since then, I did a whole 4-book graphic novel series from Scholastic called Making Friends. I'm just, like, looking at my books now. I made a Minecraft series from Dark Horse. I did a bunch of comics and hung out. I did a road trip. Had a baby. I got married. Okay, other way around. I got married, had a baby. Very important that the world knows that. I've just been making comics, hanging out, and being fun employed.
And so before we get into your comics, I do want to mention that... Actually, one of the last time I saw you, you mentioned you were a zombie.
Yeah, I was a background extra.
Well, why don't you tell people about
the
that?
The Walking Dead, the Michonne and Rick show. And I met Rick, the guy, the main guy from Walking Dead, and he was really nice. And he gave me, like, a fist bump and said I was a star. For real. It's because I jokingly, because the shot included my shoe for a moment, and I was like, wow, I'm a star. And he was like, you are a star. And he kept his accent going when he was off camera or whatever. And I also met Michonne. she introduced herself to me. I don't know why this all happened, but it was really exciting. And then I got to be a background zombie where I wore a zombie, a very, like, so the fancy zombies who get, like, stabbed in the head and stuff, they get, like, hours of makeup, but the rest of us just wore rubber masks and loped around in the background.
Really?
And it was really fun. And people, they were pretending to stab us through, like, a, you know, how they do in Walking Dead, where you're, like, they just stabbed the zombies through, like, slits in the wall. So that was me.
Well, you were in on the wall. You were in the slit.
I was, like, slowly wobbling towards the wall. And it was really interesting because you're... impulse is to lift your arms up when you're walking like a zombie, but it actually looks really dumb to do that. And they were like, arms down, and we all just were like, whoops. Yeah, that was fun.
Was it like a zombie school you had to go to, or you just showed up, and they're like, you're going to be a zombie?
Yeah, they didn't really tell us what to do. They were like, you're zombies, figure it out. Most of the people there were actually actors, so they knew what they were doing. The funny thing is that, you know how you're like, oh, where do they film this stuff? Like, where do they find these, like, desolate... you know, horrible looking locations, and it was Newark. And it really looked bad. And then I also was a background on like an episode of the Sex and the City show, and I annoyed the main lady, Cynthia Nixon. Although she
really?
Also, yeah, I was right in her way. They were like, go! And every time I went, like, I bumped into her. And then I never did it again. I never did a background thing again. But not because I bumped into Cynthia Nixon, just because I then was pregnant and was like, I don't feel like doing this. I'm really tired.
Did you bring your comics to set and be like, hey, I have some free comics?
I should have. No, I didn't.
Why not? You're supposed to be a promotional...
Give my comics away?
It'd be a promotional machine.
I guess that's true.
Or like a bookmark or something.
My newest thing is that I made stickers, and I've just been tagging the city with my stickers that have a QR code. It's funny because they say, read more comics. It's like I'm like being like, you know, promoting comics in general, but then it says, buy Kristen Gudsnuck. So it's, and then it has like a code that leads you to like samples of comics. That's my self-promotional thing. But I don't know, I find it very awkward to just literally promote myself directly to people who I don't know.
Well, so then you're in the right place.
Yeah.
So let us promote about your books to people who you don't know.
Yeah, well, this context is different.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like, cold approaching strangers and being like, hey, do you like comics? Yeah.
You know, it's weird, because since you've been on the other side of comic book tables for years, you know, to draw people to you, sometimes you go at a comic convention, do you like comics, do you like to read? And a lot of people say no. And you're like, what the hell are you doing here? Do you get that a lot?
I mean, no. Well, I don't ask people if they like to read.
What's your approach? What are you telling them to draw them in?
Hey! And then I like gesture towards my table. How are you? Feel free to check out my comics, or look at these other things. And then I leave it up to them. I don't do a hard sell because I find it uncomfortable when other people like do a hard sell to me. It makes me like makes my fight or flight go off, and I know I'm not fighting, so it's just running away.
Let's start off with a couple of books. What about your newest book? Let's talk about that. What is that about? How did you come up with the idea?
Yeah, Touched by a Demon. As we were talking about 90s TV shows, Touched by an Angel was something that was on a bunch at my grandma's house, and I used to watch it, and I thought it was really cheesy, but I also kind of liked it. Then I was watching this really bad Hallmark movie called 12 Christmas Wishes for My Dog. It was, like, so bad, and it was about this magical life coach. And I was like, what if she's really a demon? And then that gave me this whole idea. I was like, what if a demon wanted to leave hell and was trying to, like, redeem himself by, like, opening a life coach agency? And then, because, like, you know, sometimes when you watch something that's really boring and bad, like, your brain just starts going really fast and starts giving you ideas. So this movie just, like, put me into this state of inspiration, and I had the whole idea for it while watching. I kept being like, pause it, I have to write this down. And yeah, so that's kind of where the idea came from. So it's about Franz and Pazuzu, who are two demons who they don't get any respect in hell. Franz, the kind of ringleader, decides to open a life coach agency and try to help people, and it just goes terribly awry in comedic fashion.
So when you do something like that, well, first of all, is it a decision that it has to be a comedic tone? Because that's kind of your through line. of your books, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you're like, well, it's a demon, so it should be serious or something like that.
I don't think I have it in me to do an actual 100% serious comic. I even did like a serial killer one that was actually somewhat serious. Like, I wasn't trying to put jokes in, and then jokes just came out. So I just think I'm a goofy person, and I just gotta own my personality.
So with a demonic life coach, did you do any research and go to life coach and be like, well, this guy could be a demon?
No, I did research into demons. But you mean like go and get therapy? Ugh.
Well, you watch on TV, like, oh, this guy.
Yeah. I probably should have. That would have been interesting. And probably useful in other sense, too. Because I don't know. I probably do need a life coach, but I just made it all up. But actually, I feel like in a lot of ways, I put my own issues into the character's problems. Like, the first character is this girl who feels like she's like, oh, man. No, it's like she has, like, sibling issues where she's like, oh, my parents like my siblings more than me, which I actually don't think, but I've felt that because, like, you know, I have a, you don't know, I have multiple siblings, so it's always like, we're always like, who do you think they like the most? It's you. And, like, we have long discussions about this. You don't, is that not normal?
I've never had that.
We also do rankings, really. We rank everyone in our family.
I have a brother and sister. As kids, we never did any of that stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, this is just a family tradition for me. I don't know. I guess I just was like, oh, if I made it kind of over the top, so that way you would like her character. But and the second one, it's like this like guy who sucks who like he wants to improve himself, and it's like kind of like that question of like, you know, they say be yourself, but what if yourself is like a crappy person, etc. So it's like sort of things that I always, like, wonder about, and I kind of work them out through this.
Well,
but I'm not as terrible as the character.
One of the things I thought was kind of cool is that you asked your followers and readers for advice that you're for a column. How did that work out? And what kind of submissions did you get?
Yeah, I asked people for self-help questions that I could, because I had extra space at the end of the trade. Yeah, I gave some really terrible advice to people, including kidnap your boss and hold them hostage and make them fall in love with you so that they will give you a raise and you'll have job stability. And also one person I sent to kill themselves in a funny way.
You told them to kill themselves in a funny way, or you told them in a funny way to kill themselves?
They said that they were reading lots of webtoons, and I was like, go get hit by a truck so that you can wake up in a magical world, which is a plot of, like, most webtoons. I know, I was like, I was like, maybe they'll cut that one out. But we'll see. I don't know. I've been reading a lot of webtoons myself, so that was kind of in my head. But I know I'm always like, hopefully I'm not giving too much bad advice and like bad messaging. But at the same time, I've been doing kid stuff for so long that I was like, I naturally have I have like an edgelord sense of humor at heart. So like I needed an outlet for that. And I was like, if not these demons, then who else?
Mm-hmm. So
obviously don't, no one actually.
Don't do it that?
Don't commit suicide.
Is there a disclaimer on the book?
No.
No.
I should put one. I think there's still time. I'll put a little asterisk.
No, don't follow any advice given in this book.
Follow traffic safety guidelines.
So you work for, well, I wouldn't say you work for Dark Horse. Or for a
freelancer, yeah.
Right, you're a freelancer, but they're the ones that publish your book. Is it weird when you're writing your own stuff and then you have a boss to look under, or is it not like that at all?
They're so cool and good that I don't have a problem with them. They're very like, do whatever you want. I mean, when they give me notes, it's always like helpful notes and very like cosmetic changes. They're very like artist and writer friendly.
What kind of cosmetic changes are we talking about?
Oh,
make
like
this guy's eye red as opposed to blue.
Oh no, no! Like put a comma here, like put a hyphen in this thing because grammar.
So, do you also edit your own stuff, or do they edit it for you?
They do a editing pass, but actually, I was an English major back in school, and I love grammar, so my stuff is usually pretty clean by the time it gets to them.
Is it more difficult or easier when you're doing things for yourself and you're worried that you have to pass it on to somebody else before it sees print?
What do you mean?
I mean that you're making something for yourself, And then instead of doing it yourself and putting it out there yourself, you're going through another company. You're going through somebody else.
So much easier.
And be like...
It's so much harder doing something all yourself, because when you have to promote it yourself, two, you have to, like, print it, oversee the printing, and pay for that, and it's great to have someone else do that. And three, they also have, like, a publicity team that promotes your thing, so it's not just you. And they put it in stores, so there's really no... The only downside is getting a book deal can be difficult at times, so...
How does one go about getting a book deal?
Well, the way I broke into comics was I got a table at New York Comic Con once, just totally randomly, because someone on Facebook was like, I need someone to share my table. My supposed table mate dropped out. So I just randomly got a table with someone, and then I made a bunch of contacts there that first year. And so it's just doing, like, honestly doing, like, read pop shows and tabling and being approached by editors and then getting... contacts within various publishers and then sending them your pitches and making a pitch. Just ask other people, like, for your thing, ask people, what do you think is the hook here? Because it's really hard to find the hook when it's your own thing, because you're too close to it to see, like, what the marketable angle is. And just make sure you find the quick sell for what your idea is, because it's happened so many times where I'm like, oh, this is a great idea, but if you can't explain it quickly, it doesn't matter how good it is, because, like, no one's going to, like, just be like, oh, I'll take your word for it. This thing that you're just mumbling and stuttering about is actually good. So you have to just figure out how to say it quickly and interestingly.
It's the classic elevator pitch, right?
Exactly.
Is that something that you've honed over the years?
I literally just ask other people, like, how would you describe this? Like, guys, I can't do it. I mean, when you make a pitch, usually you put a log line, which is, like, the one sentence... elevator pitch, or in my case, it's always like four sentences because I don't follow rules.
That table you had in New York Comic Con, that was when it was in the hangar, right? Like on the backside?
Yeah.
And it was with a guy, right?
Yeah.
See,
Gerald
I told you.
Primark.
You see, I told you, I remember, I'm really good at remembering situations. I remember you were splitting a table with a guy, and he was very promoting of you. He's like, check her stuff out.
Yeah,
I don't know if you
really
remember
cool.
that.
Yeah. We tabled together a few more years after that because, between the two of us, it was always like a, you know, when you're first starting out, it's hard to know if you can actually get a table at New York Comic Con because it's actually hard to get a table in Artist Alley when you're just coming up, you know? So, yeah. And also, I didn't have as much stuff. Nowadays, I have too many comics. It's, like, hard to fit everything onto my table, so it's a little complicated.
So what's the biggest difference you've noticed from when you started to now in the world of A, comic conventions, and B, in the world of comics in general?
Well, the biggest difference, I feel like I kind of, in some ways, I checked out of the comics world, like the readership side a little bit, just because I had a baby and all this other stuff, and I just was like grinding on deadlines for a really long time, so I'm probably not the most, you know, up to date on those things, and I've just mainly been in like a webtoon and manga headspace lately. I don't know, I'm old now and everyone's getting younger and they won't get off my lawn.
Well, I saw you at Big Apple Con,
mm-hmm.
and I hadn't seen you in a while.
Yeah.
So when having that table at that time, can you think like, wow, it's different now, it's the same now, there's no difference at all?
I mean, maybe there's, like, more women in the comic conventions than right at the beginning, because it's actually quite a gender parity split now. It seems very even. There's, like, a lot of sort of, like, female-coded stuff now, because I think that probably because of the anime and manga and stuff.
Did you find that being a female in the male-dominated society that comics was back in the day made a difference, made it harder for you, or was it because you were the girl? Like, oh, I'm the girl, I can just...
Yeah, I'm like, I'm special. I have a bow. No, it's fine. I didn't care. You know, I feel like people were maybe more enthusiastic. I feel like in the old days, people were, like, really, like, psyched about being like, we got to promote women in comics. And everyone's like, yeah, you're fine. Maybe it's because I was just coming out, so people were like, have you heard of Kristen Gutznuck? And everyone's like, well... You might have heard of her. If not, read her stuff. I don't care. No, it was always fine. No, no, no. No one was ever rude to me. Maybe, if anything, they were nicer to me.
I don't know.
Due to being, like, in my 20s and, like, naive.
So what other books do you have on the display here?
I didn't really bring all my books, but I have my Minecraft graphic novel and the first three issues of Touched by a Demon. And then my motivational anime stickers.
So for the Minecraft, that is a licensed property.
Yeah.
How is working on a licensed property?
Well, that was a book that I got because my editor on Henchgirl was also, like, editing the Minecraft books. So they were like, do you like Minecraft? And I was like, I could. And I actually, like, was like, oh, great, I can, like, I, like, bought a Nintendo Switch and got Minecraft for the Switch. And I was like, I can tax deduct the Switch. And, yeah, I just played a lot of Minecraft. It was really fun. It was cool because Minecraft is really, like, open-ended. So I didn't have to, like, do a lot of research because that's honestly the part that scares me the most about doing, like, IPs is being, like, what if I don't know every single detail about this thing that's been around since, like, you know, the 80s or whatever? So this one I could just make up my own lore. And it was really fun. I like doing it a lot.
But that's a... Do you feel that it's necessary for someone to have that extensive background? Because as we were talking about before, a lot of people who are making shows now, or making properties now, don't really know about the old stuff. And some of them vehemently promote that they don't know.
I think that's a bad look. I don't like that.
Okay.
If it's something I like, I want the person to be into it. Otherwise, I'm like, why would you even be doing this? Because if you, like, want to act like you're, like, fixing the thing that is beloved, then it just seems, like, very, like, egotistical. I don't know. I don't really do licensed stuff ever. That's the only licensed thing I've done because I get... Actually, no, I did some Strawberry Shortcake shorts for IDW.
So you're...
And I had to watch a bunch... I watched much Strawberry Shortcake, and it was like my brain was, like, melting out of my ears. It was, like, bad.
Did the Minecraft book came out before or after the movie?
Before.
So what did you think when you saw the movie? Did they take some of your ideas?
I didn't see the movie yet.
No, you don't have to, because you're not doing it anymore. So you're not required...
Actually, they asked me if I was interested in doing more. Oh. So I don't know if that was legit. It was just, like, casually at a convention. But maybe I would someday. I guess it would have to be a different thing because I finished this story. But, no, I want to watch the Minecraft movie. I just was, like, once again, having a baby, I'm, like, I feel weird watching kids' movies without him. Because then I'm, like, I should just, like, wait 2 years and watch it with him. Well, I'm still waiting to watch Kung Fu Panda.
Aren't you supposed to, like, watch it first to make sure it's appropriate for kids and then you watch it a second time?
No.
No.
I'm not going to watch it twice.
Why not? Isn't that what you're supposed to do? I don't know.
No.
That's not like a rule you're supposed to monitor all your children's stuff where you just let them go and...
No.
Really?
That sounds horrible.
Really?
Watching a movie twice in a row?
Not in a row. I guess you would watch something like, oh, make sure it's suitable for your child. I thought that's what parents do.
No, you just turn it off really quickly if it's
All right,
traumatizing.
Are you going to write stuff for your kid?
Actually, I wanted to make a baby book. First of all, easy money. Second of all, yeah, it's like you draw like 12 pictures. And you're like, I did a book. But also, like, I have insight into, like, what the market needs.
Really?
Yeah.
What does the baby market need?
It needs a book that has, like, every page there's something that you do to the baby, not just, like, a little story. But, like, an action that goes with it to keep the baby engaged. That's what my baby likes, so.
Really? So, like, an interactive...
No, it's just like, Poppins, kiss the little duckling. And he gives the baby a kiss. And they're like, oh, the duckling high-fived Poppins.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
So, like, active stuff, not just, you know, so that way you teach them, physical movement mixed with a book.
Right,
like,
I gotcha.
It's more engaging.
So, what's next?
I'm working on a pitch. Actually, I have, like, three pitches that I'm just scattering between right now. And also, I want to pitch more. I actually have, like, a really good idea for a series 2 of Touched by a Demon. And I just have to, like, organize all my notes. So, that would be something that I really want to do. And I'm kind of, like, I probably shouldn't say that because, like, you're not supposed to say that until you do it, but until you get, like, a deal. But maybe I'll just, like, speak it into existence. And then I have, like, this, like, romantic-y comedy comic idea that I just thought of it, like, a week and a half ago. But that means that the idea is really fresh and exciting. So I've also been, like, developing that.
All right. So social media time. Where can people find out more about your book, more about yourself? Go.
You know, you can go to kristenbesnuk.com, and there, I have a mailing list. Sign up there. You should sign up for my mailing list, because then you'll get emails from me every once in a while that are so great and fun. But you can also go to henchgirl_comic on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky, and get, you know, see my posts.
So you were kind enough to raffle off. What are we raffling off?
I'll do the first two, Touched by a Demon.
First two, Touched by a Demon. And we're also giving away two free passes to the Cradle Con, which is in the Cradle of Aviation.
Cool.
Do you want to give it as a bundle? Do you want to do the books and the tickets separate? It's up to you. You're our guest.
Whoa. Let's do two.
Two. All right. So you want to do the books first or the tickets first? Too many options?
It's like a lot of decisions here, like very split-second decisions. First, we'll do the tickets.
Tickets. All right. Pull it out. These are for the two free passes to the CradleCon. What number we got?
376-732.
732. There we go, right there.
Winner.
We'll take care of you after that. And now for
the comics.
The comics.
Let's see. 376-731.
731.
Oh, you already have him.
No, he doesn't want him. He has one ready. He doesn't want a second copy. He's like, I don't want another one.
Hey, how about, like, you can have these anime stickers. You want me to do one more? I'll get my...
Are you happy with the stickers?
Yeah, I have the stickers.
All right, is that good enough for you?
Yeah, it's fine. Or I can also do a third one. Yeah, I have my books here. Promote them. Okay. 376-738.
738.
Who's got it? Oh, wow.
Well, everybody's here.
Not
want me
to...
What's the name?
Kelly. Okay. Yeah, so it's probably Kelly, because everybody else is here. All right, so we're almost out of time.
Okay.
Final thought?
Read my book. Read my book. Hypnosis time.
So my final thought is this. Thank you very much for coming down and being a guest on our live show. It's really crazy how it's been so long since we've done anything like this. I mean, we do small
little
things.
Neither of us has aged a day.
So for people who are listening to this, you can actually go onto the YouTube page and type in Kristen Gutsnick live stream. You can find the video that I'm talking about. It's on our YouTube page from 8 years.
I have very different hair.
Okay. You had the punk rock hair.
Yeah,
you had the,
I was
you had
like,
the green.
Cool.
Yeah, you had the green punk rock hair.
Then I became a mom, and I was like, I give up. Hey, I bathed. That's like a win.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From The Radio. So join us right here every week on this radio station. If you missed any part of the show, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. Listen to archives will be up in a week or so. Our next live show, which will be on... Hold on, I gotta check my notes. Which will be on our 104th show at the East Mall Public Library. It will be on May 13th. And we will have a comic book writer, creator, and publisher, Phil Russell, will be our guest. So with that, we'll see you all next time. Thank you for being part of our live show.
Yay!
You've been listening to It Came From The Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.